Hey, bookworms, this is Megan coming at you with another Cantina Conversation. Today's episode features a chat with Justin McHenry. We're talking about his book, Lemura, A True Story of a Fake Place. That book is available now. So this is a nonfiction title, just a heads up. It's still really interesting. It's basically an exploration of how this idea, like the research that went into, like just trying to figure out where, how lemurs got onto Madagascar and how throughout history it just kind of unraveled into this crazy, conspiracy theories and altered scientific evolution, like thoughts about scientific evolution and all that stuff. And it was really cool getting into to diving deeper with Justin to talk about how his process and the crazy stuff that he came across in his research and all of that. But either way, I'll let you guys get to it. Here is Justin. So today we've got Justin McHenry. We are talking about Lemuria, A True Story of a Fake Place. Justin, thanks for chatting with me today. I really didn't know what to expect when I started this book, but I learned a lot, and it's fascinating and silly and it's crazy and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. It is a fun story, and I think that's the craziness and the wildness of it is what really drew me to Lemuria itself. It's good times.
I want to definitely get into that, like how this project came to be for you. But could you give like a summary real quick?
Sure. Lemuria, how I like to describe Lemuria, Lemuria is to the Pacific and Indian Oceans what Atlantis is to the Atlantic Ocean. Lemuria is the great lost continent of the Pacific and Indian Oceans. But it's also, Atlantis is like hoity-toity and has very much its own history and backstory to it. Lemuria, since it has none of that grounding and like myth and mythology, it used for everything. And so it is a crazy, whacked out sort of place where you have all kinds of things going on there, from being the home of lemurs to cyclops and Jedi-powered beings and gelatinous blobs and a whole bunch of other fun stuff.
Yeah, that's so crazy how like what started out as like basically a theory of how the species ends up on this like isolated land turned into all of that. That's wild, and I it's a little scary at the same time for sure. Going into that, I want to get into your background, and because you've got a couple nonfiction works published, correct, besides this one? And so, yeah, I want to go into your background, like how you started and what draws you to the genre, and how Maria just grabbed.
Yeah, mine's in history. I have a master's degree in history. I have always loved history, but I've also always loved weird things and just the strange and bizarre. And of course, I love the history of the strange and bizarre. And being in that sort of realm, I have picked up bits and pieces of the Lemurian story, mostly from Madame Blavatsky and all of her stuff. I know Lemuria was very big in her kind of cosmology of her evolutionary thought. But also like the Shaver mysteries as well. I knew about them going into doing this. And everybody else at the start of the pandemic, I was like bored at home and wanting to do something. And I love researching. So I was like, let's maybe write a book. And it just happened to come up in my like day job. I was writing about Lemuria came up as how there's a distinct beginning of it in science in like legitimate 19th century science, then how that just evolved over the decades and century and a half since.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, because you definitely did your homework with this, and you had to, but yeah, because you started off all the way back and then you brought it up to today. And so I want to go into your research process. I want to explore that. Did you approach it like the same way as you do with either similar projects that don't get published, for example? Like how were that? And then you like, I'm assuming you learned tons of fascinating things, and I imagine it's hard to cover them all. But yeah, I want to explore and like how you tackled this and how, if you approached it the same way.
Yeah,
I
was very lucky, especially with Lemuria, because since it does have such a set beginning, like in the 1860s, Like, it starts right there with the name creation. And having that definitive start point is very easy to just go along almost chronologically and tracking it year by year, decade by decade, topic by topic, and seeing it how it progressed and seeing that evolution itself, too. There was also another book, a very...
Was there anything...
Okay. I was going to say there was another book. There was a scholarly work written in the early 2000s that laid a lot of the groundwork as well. And so like that helped steer some of the my research as well and going into different places and different topics too.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was going to say, like, how do you even organize something like that? Because it's because Lemuria got pulled into mythology. It got associated with Atlantis and the Atlanteans. It got somehow was associated with outer space and aliens, and then it somehow grew into deep state. It's just everybody used it. It was just, I imagine you got pulled into so many different directions, and how crazy just trying to stay organized and trying to like just keeping the focus narrow.
Yeah, it really is, and part of the struggle as well is like when to go deep into a topic or when to pull back or when to just mention something and let someone else go off on that tangent if they want to go down it themselves. And so a lot of the organization was just, luckily, it kind of organized itself almost because there was originals like scientific aspect of it that talked about animal migration. And then it went into the realm of human evolution. And so you talk about like the early evolutionist and Darwinist, and then Madame Blavatsky took over and took it in weird directions, and all of the theosophists after Madame Blavatsky. And it just comes to America, and then it stays in America, and in following that track of lining and into the politics of it, and then also the alternative religions that it spawns or that it touches upon as well. And then it gets into channeling and the New Age movement. And then from New Age, it spawns into today and like conspiracy-based backgrounds.
Yeah, I thought it was so crazy how, in retrospect, I'm like, okay, in that context, I also thought it was funny how some of these, like, scientists, like, respectable people at the time, parts of their, like, theories or parts of their, obviously, they were smart, they were intelligent to be able to look, think outside of the box, right? And people just were not as educated back then. We didn't have technology to confirm things. So it's, like, fascinating how just these people were trustworthy, but then they also, like, they're just... amongst each other too, like they're bashing each other and their theories. And then the interesting points you bring up about back then, they still fell to the same patterns that we see today, where confirmation bias and like just finding facts that support your argument, even if it comes from someone who you think is a whack job, right? It was like, I thought that was so fascinating. Did you find like a lot of that? And is that kind of common? Like when you writing your other works of nonfiction, like how, I don't know, was there as much drama or all of that trash talking, anything?
Yeah,
like
that's funny you brought that up. There very much is. I think it's just an ego-driven thing too. You get these scientists and doctors together and they obviously think that they know everything. They know what special sauce is the best. And when you have someone like butting up against that or thinking otherwise, then they get their hackles up and they start attacking each other. And you get really a lot of bitchy moments between scientists and things like that. But yeah, my other works, I wrote about these two colonial doctors who are the leading physicians in America at the time of the American Revolution. And they both were actually the heads of the medical department in the Continental Army. But they absolutely hated each other. And so you would just see these back and forth bitching. One took the other's job, and then the other one was like working for years and years to backstab him to try to get his job taken away from him. And it's just, so I think it's just like an ego thing of people who are used to being told they're right, and when they're challenged, even in the slightest bit, they have to go after one another with a vengeance and a fury.
Yeah, and I think it's also because it's like a little more public, right? It's not like you're in, like word gets out that someone's talking shit about your work. Like it's so I think that's part of it too, where they're like,
Excuse me, absolutely not. I spent years on my theory or this and that and the other. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm going to go talk some shit back. I guess it brings the excitement and the competitiveness of it. But I imagine to the common public, maybe it does look petty, or maybe it does just garner more interest in what the heck they're talking about. Even if it's not, even if maybe something like flies over their head, they're still like, ooh, like two smart people like fighting. This should be good.
That reminds me of Ernst Haeckel and how he was such a bulldog. And he was almost took the stance like any publicity is good publicity. And so he was very much like fighting for Darwinism to be an accepted fact in the late 19th century. And so he would go after any and everybody and just was like WWE. He was like throwing down with any and all the scientists who were still like strict creationist or whatever. And so he would combat them. And then it was funny when you have Blavatsky overtakes or starts hijacking Ernst Haeckel's thoughts on evolution. So he was putting forth his ideas on evolution, and then she was putting forth her ideas of like spiritual evolution, and she was using Haeckel as like a straw man to set up her argument against. And that just pissed Haeckel off like completely. And so where in his major work, The History of Creation, he was the first one to actually put Lemuria on a map. Like he drew this really beautiful map of the Indian Ocean and the South Pacific, and he drew Lemuria right in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And then a couple years later, Blavatsky puts out her ideas and starts talking about Lemuria. And then in the following editions of Haeckel's work, he takes it away. He like deletes Lemuria off the map because he doesn't want to be associated with Blavatsky whatsoever. And it's also, and he also doesn't want to be associated with people who are associated with Blavatsky because he had a correspondence with Rudolf Steiner. And Steiner was a highly intellectual man of his day as well. But he was a theosophist. And then when word got back to Haeckel that Steiner was a theosophist, he was like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. We're done here.
Yeah, hopping off of that, that's one of the things I found fascinating. I found interesting about her approach with the spiritual evolution. Because so much of what you hear about evolution, at least that comes to mind when I hear the word, it's theories such as Darwinism, like the physical aspect of it, like surviving based on the skills that are most successful and that help you survive. And she approached it with like, why is nobody talking about spiritual evolution? Like what makes us tick? What makes us go? What makes us, like, how does that fit in? And I thought it was just really indicative of where she stood on a lot of things, where she was definitely like thinking outside the box. And she was definitely like, you know, trying to like push the envelope a little bit. And in a time where I imagine was very uncommon for women in the first place, because she was Russian, right? Was she in Russia? Yeah. So there you go. It's even though I don't know, there's a lot I don't know. This is all context here that I'm speculating, but yeah. So I just thought that was so interesting and so cool that, it's just something that never occurred to me before. I guess I have a tendency to accept things like, oh yeah, I guess that could be considered like Darwinism. It makes total sense to me. I'm like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. So I guess I don't question it but thankfully there are people, marvelous brains that do question things. So I just thought that was like so fascinating that she, that aspect that she was digging into and how it played in this big picture. I just thought that, like, and it's that also maybe I've worked against her too, because then people maybe couldn't take her seriously if they're like, that's not important. That's not science. What are you talking
about? But also, it's like, very interesting you brought that up, because that's probably why she has been so influential as she is. She cut themes long before anybody else did, and putting it in the realm of people, having very much it on you to become your own god almost. Having those ideas put out there. And of course, people, her disciples after her, would build upon that and create those ideas and really, and it would like blossom in the 20th century as the New Age movement. But she laid that groundwork, and it's probably why I would think she's one of the most influential people of the 19th century. Actually, reading about her and studying her and seeing her influence and how it's still impacts us today as a society. Like, she came off as a more impressive figure than I thought she would be. Like, I don't believe a lot of what she says, like, personally, but he can't deny the impact that she has had on the world.
Yeah, I really like that approach, that objective. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to give her credit, but I don't know about that.
Yeah. She also talked about, her spiritual evolutionary steps, and especially when it comes to Lemuria, like, involved, like, Cyclops walking around on Earth and telekinetic powers and stuff like that. So it's, when you get those, that kind of things going on, it's just, let's... I don't quite believe in Cyclops being a real thing in the way.
Like, you had me up until then. There was something else I wanted to go back to. Oh, okay. So this Lemuria, it was very interesting. And there's, like I said, there's so many places that you could go in it. But I was under the impression that this, what, land bridge was located in between Africa and Madagascar. Is that still like the base? Okay. Because some of the maps and then some people's theories, and this is probably part of the whole point that you illustrated in your book, was that I saw some maps where it was like you mentioned before, where we're stuck in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and then evolution theories came about, evolution based on that placement, the paths that beings, humans and animals would have taken and years ago, because of its location in that specific spot. But we're like, wait, how